Hello, Grandison. This is Frank here today in Tampa, Florida. You're out there in Arizona. How are you doing?
Yes. Yep, sunny Arizona. How's it going over there?
Doing well. I think we've got some really interesting conversations to have about what's happened this past week. But let's kick off and introduce our audience to something a little bit novel, not a novel coronavirus, but a novel consideration for our podcast today. It will be recorded via YouTube video. So those of you who are listening to the podcast, feel free to click the link on our podcast. That'll bring you over to the video in case you want to look at these slides. But what we've done here is set up a debate. Debate is around the motion, did America let in coronavirus but leave out bioscience? So we're going to co-moderate this, and arguing for the motion is going to be Grandison, and against the motion is going to be me, Frank. So you fine with that standoff, Grandison?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, so before we do that, what we're going to do is touch on a few things that happened in the news this past week. So yeah, I guess one thing is Obama came out with his new book, The Promised Land. I guess it's called The Promised Land Volume One. So I guess we all get Lord, right? He's setting us up as another.
Volume two, huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Have you heard much about the book or anything?
Haven't heard that much about it, but I know he wrote it.
Yeah, I listened to a few interviews, MSNBC and BBC and a few other, I think it was NPR or something. But yeah, it seems he's making a strong point around, the need for us to come together and set aside,
Absolutely.
some of these strong polarized differences that we have,
Differences, yeah.
and that ultimately the his point has always been the long arc of history is towards egalitarian and against racism and for inclusion of all voices, gender voices of different colors and backgrounds and cultures and countries and immigrants and that type of thing. So it strikes the same kind of typical Obama
Sure.
positive message. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes right down to it, you look at the American, USA here, our country, we're like one big family. We should come together and we still come together and debate effectively, like we're going to talk about, like we're going to do today. We should be able to leave out some of the other nuances of the differences of people and just realize that we still have a common ground here, if we can say it like that. Just make sure that we're working together versus being so partisan.
Yeah, and we touched on that point in the book around, where we
Invited,
mentioned
I should say.
democracy is an entite it's not an entitlement, it's an experiment, right?
Exactly.
Democracy. No country in the history of civilization has ever brought people together from all parts of the world and try to make it work. I mean, it happened. And the reality is, as the world becomes smaller and smaller, every country, every company, right, even families, right, are so
Correct.
integrated into multicultural families and so forth, that we're all going to have to figure this out at some point anyway. The world's just getting a lot smaller. So, hey, if America can figure this out faster than our competitors and take the early lead, then yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Other parts and bits of information and news. Amazon enters the pharmacy business. Did you hear about that? Big news, man. We've been talking about that at different points for years now, and they finally have done it.
Which is, of course, Amazon. I'm not very surprised at that. I'm surprised it came as soon as it did, but I figured, of course, we knew it was coming, and that's going to be a really big game changer there.
You look at what is it their hate was it it's called the Halo? I think it's called the Halo. The other new device that they've come out with, which tracks all sorts of biometrics and psychological factors through this device. And you combine that with all the pharmaceutical information, right? Talk about knowing more about you than you know about yourself. This is where they're going to go. It's huge. And the reality is they don't have much of a choice. There's only a few markets they can go into because they're going to have to, in order to, to satisfy, Wall Street, they've got to go after really big markets with big revenue and profit potential. And there aren't a whole lot of, new markets like that. Education, healthcare, probably the top some of the top ones that haven't been already disrupted. So yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting. I just think of the work that we did out at Express Scripts, where I did all the Lean Six Sigma machine learning type of work. And two of our top people in machine learning out of our R&D department were poached by Amazon. And they're now still working with Amazon on all this stuff. So it was definitely not a surprise 5 years ago when they were looking at how to get talent and bring talent that already understood how the healthcare market worked and bring them into their organization. So
that's the way to do it.
Airbnb files for IPO.
IPO, yes.
Yeah. Any thoughts about that? Do you hear about this?
Yeah, I heard a little bit about it. Not surprised there either. Actually, I heard something about it last year, and I thought it would happen sooner. But yeah, understanding that their IPO is on the books there, that's pretty good. It's pretty awesome.
They're kind of like Uber with a conscience, right? In terms of their CEO, their leader. Now, I'm talking about the previous Travis. You know, their current CEO out at Uber is doing much better, but their original founder. You look at the difference, the way Airbnb has approached things in a much more conciliatory and collaborative way with different, you know, with the hotel industry, with kind of the current incumbents in the industry. Obviously they're disrupting, but they've done it in a way that's been much more collaborative and much more congenial, as opposed to kind of the strong fisted approach that was taken by Uber. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that bodes really well for them. You just look at their growth and now with the coronavirus, they've actually pivoted in ways that really set them up for some great opportunities. I'm hearing stories about they're probably looking, you know, probably to expand, you know, in the purchase and have their pick of whatever hotels they want to go after and acquire, use that as a way of making it possible for people as they travel to different places around the world. They can use Airbnb and set up not just their home, but set up even work environments, office space environments, and things of that sort. So really some interesting innovative ideas that they have in mind. And I think this is going to be a really smart decision long-term for what where they're looking.
Yeah, I think they're poised very well also. Mm-hmm.
Last 2 points around coronavirus, but before that, we talk about, you know, the fact that we're still seeing Trump push back pretty strongly around election results, whether in Pennsylvania or Michigan, even Georgia, I guess, a lot of the battleground states. But looks like some of the latest information I saw, I think around midweek, of about 31 attempts to turn things back. He lost 31-1. So looks like most of the
motions through the court system you're talking about?
Yeah, the court cases. Yeah.
So the court cases, they're getting thrown out left and right.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess we'll see how that the wheels of justice grind slowly. So we'll just have to let them grind forward and hopefully.
Yeah. I understand that he went to Michigan and called the meeting with the legislation there, and I'm not sure how that went out. I didn't hear much about it after the fact, but I know he was going over there to chat with the folks to do a recount and whatnot. Did you hear
that? Yeah, exactly. And then what latest information has been really so the local activists and voters came out very strongly online and otherwise with strong messages around. Essentially, they were, you know, trying to get votes thrown out, and they responded very strongly against their local officials, and so the local officials started to back down and to agree that, you know, we've got to recognize the voice and the rights of the people. But then just at the end of the day, I think it was like maybe late Friday or Saturday or something, someone said that maybe they're backing away from that decision. So we'll have to see how that all shakes out this weekend.
Yeah,
early next week. So,
absolutely.
The last two, coronavirus hits record high. So not only the cases and infections, but deaths are on the rise. We haven't seen this since the original peak back in the springtime, and Looking at some of these numbers here, just looking at, say, the average, I think this is like a 7-day moving average of deaths. You can see in the lower left-hand corner, you know, where you saw a peak somewhere in around July timeframe, late right. June, July timeframe.
Yep.
A little over 50, somewhere around 70,000 maybe deaths. And now we're at 198,000. Cases there, infections there. And then it's gone up to 198,000. So I remember during the springtime, as we were talking through this and writing the book, you know, most of the time it was hovering between about 20 to 30, 40,000, right? Most people right around an average of 25,000, which is what you can see in the lower left hand, the initial part of that curve where it peaked pretty quickly, January, you know, February, March timeframe, and then pretty much settled right around that 25, 30,000 cases per day. And right. then June, summer came, right? And it jumped.
Yep, and especially after 4th of July as well.
Exactly, 4th of July, yep. Really peaked high. Then it's been coming down, stabilizing, and now it's, right, it's on the mend back up.
Yeah. They're saying that they'll see even more surge after Thanksgiving. They're really, the CDC is really coming out and saying, stay home. But of course, they can't make people stay home.
Right.
They figure that here in Arizona, that there's going to be more cases that come about after Thanksgiving because people want to get together and congregate and be with family. And in fact, I bet that's definitely going to happen here as well. We knew it was going to happen after the 4th of July. We got invited to a home party. We did not go. And some people found out there afterwards got the coronavirus infection. We believe that's going to happen here after Thanksgiving as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to really be a dark, gloomy period post, kind of like the dark ages here for a while as we go through the winter months. Well, on the upside, three COVID vaccines, right, are preparing for rollout. Pfizer, BioNTech out of Germany. You got Oxford and AstraZeneca and Moderna. And then I heard, it was late Friday that J&J came out with something. So I believe there may be four of these. And then over the weekend, I read that around this new report that's going to be that's being released here soon. But the initial report was around the use of, you know, the CRISPR genetic scissors, coding technology, right, to find a cure. And they essentially, you know, they looked at 20,000 genomes, and they narrowed it down to about 30 that seemed to be directly related to coronavirus. And from those, I think roughly about 8 current products on the market that could be you know, a therapeutic potential. I'm not sure if it's a cure yet. The full data is going to be coming out, but at least a therapeutic potentially. A cure vaccine associated with those 8 findings of previous different types of medication that might serve to fight the coronavirus.
Wow, awesome. Yeah, it's fast too. We'll get into that though, aren't we?
Yeah. So that's some good news on the horizon. So there's what we know in terms of information in the news this week. I know there's a lot of other things going on, but those are a few high points. With that said, let's go ahead and switch gears and we'll kick off this debate.
Absolutely.
So first of all, the debate rules for today is we'll start off with opening remarks, 2 minutes per person, and we'll start off with me going against the motion. Then we'll have 2 minutes to respond. You know, each of us will be able to respond to each other's opening remarks. It will take about another 10 minutes to respond to kind of the moderator questions that we've kind of put up here for ourselves. And then 10 minutes of open discussion before we do closing remarks with the final two minutes each. So with that said, let's go ahead and let's light this candle. So again, the motion is that America led in coronavirus but left out bioscience. So maybe a lot of the restrictions and things that were associated with what was seen in other countries, we could have done here better and therefore could have limited the number of infections and deaths. That's the motion. With that said, I am arguing against the motion. So, Grandison, first of all, here's the reason why we can't accept the notion that all these restrictions and so forth is the way to go, right? If you look at it, the data clearly shows that the cure has been worse than the virus. We look at trillions of dollars in lost business. We look at the fact that, you know, at one point we had unemployment rate, you know, of 40 million people. I think the number is still somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 10 million people that are out of work. We look at all these businesses that have shut down and closed, many of which will never come back. We look what we've done psychologically to our children, to individuals who are just trying to get by and, you know, and get through the day. We look at what's happened with the education for our children, for colleges and for K through 12, right? Those are years, those are educational opportunities that we'll never recover from. They'll never get back. And the data shows that those things have a direct impact on long-term lives and ability of individuals to make a living in the future. Also, when we look at the ways that testing has been done, right? We've not only, you know, over-tested, right? Just more testing than really we need to do. And every time we do that, then we say, wow, we got more infections and more cases. Well, of course, I mean, we're testing more. So you're gonna get more infections and more cases. So it's almost like illogical. I'm not sure why, you know, people would be surprised by that figure, right? Also, I've got friends that are, you know, that are in parts of the White House and government, and they tell me that there are these perverse incentives for clinics, hospitals, physicians, you know, healthcare professionals and nurses and everyone to overcount their numbers so they can get more money and funding or reimbursement by the government. So, you know, you got to take this with a grain of salt when we start having these extremely high, you know, examples of here's what the death rate is when in fact it's probably a fraction of that. Also, for many people, these masks are not just uncomfortable, right? People have serious asthmatic and other respiratory issues. Wearing these masks is just not a good option for them. And not only that, let's be honest with you, right? We live in a free country. This is a form of oppression, right? Wearing these masks and forcing people what to do, how to open up their businesses, when they can leave, when they can, you know, go home, not go home, when they can start their day. I mean, all these things are just crazy. Lockdowns and all of this is completely anti-American, and it infringes on our most basic rights as Americans. So for those reasons, the cure isn't worth it. We've overcounted, we've miscounted. We put people in situations where they just can't win. And we're using this as a form of oppression that infringes upon American people. For those reasons, I argue against the motion.
Okay. All right. I understand that. And of course, I am going to oppose your motion there. And I think one of the first things we must do is start off with defining the problem. And I believe that's one of the issues that we have. We haven't really fully defined the problem or even mentioned it to the fact, or let me say, exposed it to the fact where everyone is on the same page about that there's a problem. Native Americans don't even think we have a problem. They feel it's just one of those things. It's like the flu. So some of the examples that we've heard, of course, and they are abundant out there, is that we have car accidents, but we don't shut down, we don't close the roads, which, okay, I get that. That's totally different. To me, you're not comparing apples to oranges. That's in one location. We have a virus that spread throughout, people carrying around. So to me, that's not a legitimate argument. And we also had, let it run its course. Herd immunity, right? That's just, yeah. The strongest will survive. Survival of the fittest, as they say. And that too, and as we'll see, some of the data has not bode well for countries like Sweden. So yes, you can, and or Brazil, which has, I mean, we talk about it and we're thinking about, is America ready for 4 to 5 times the death rate of the current, even when we have some restrictions? We also heard it's just like the flu. And people are not as susceptible to the flu. And it's people die from the flu every year and everything else that comes with the flu. Okay, well, I get that. I understand that. Now we're more comparing apples to apples versus apples oranges. Yes, it's not that it's just like the flu, but it has some certain nuances with it. But when we talk about cases, we'll talk about some data there. And then we heard it's just one person from China. It will go away in April, right? The president was saying that, along with all the other jargon he was saying, it will just disappear, it'll go away. And that too has not been shown to be absolutely true and or happening at the moment. Going away, no, it's still here. In fact, it's surging again. And for some reason, people still think we don't have a problem. Then by definition, you hear people say a pandemic is a pandemic, exactly what it is. It's a pandemic, we can't control a pandemic. They've always been around. Yes, this is true. And as we continue to have as we continue to encroach on some of the animal kingdom, as we continue to cross those boundaries and bring those diseases into the human environment, yes, yeah, so it's going to be around. Yes, it's going to be around. We understand that. But by just saying a pandemic is a pandemic, can't control it, no, that's not true. There's been many, many things in the past, Spanish flu 1918, SARS, MERS, MERS, where we have controlled it. And I believe that if we operate appropriately, we can control and even mitigate it, even as we are still working on this vaccine. So that's, of course, I am for the motion of making sure that we have certain mandates in place.
So with that said, we're going to switch to each opponent responding for 2 minutes to the opening remarks of their competitor here. So we've completed the opening remarks here. I heard what you had to say there, Granison. So let me kind of give you my thoughts on what I heard from you. So let's consider the car accident issue, right? And take that to its logical conclusion. Mm-hmm. There are clearly places, if I've got a large city, right, with millions and millions of people and very small roads, right, my speed limit is 30 miles an hour or 45 miles an hour. If I'm going through a school district, maybe my school limit is going to be 20 or 25 mile an hour speed limit. But if I'm in Wyoming, the open plains of Montana, right, I'm in some open rural area in the Midwest, right? Open highway on the West Coast. You're going to apply and use just common sense around speed limits. And it's the same thing here. It's like we shut down everything and we don't take an approach that considers where there's an outbreak. We apply the same thing. We clamp down on all these communities that are just basically barely able to survive and get by. And that to me is a perfect example of how these elites from the different coasts or out of Washington, D.C. or, you know, out of these universities or Silicon Valley, they try to impose some rule that they think makes sense for them in their small little area in New York or San Francisco and try to apply it across the entire country. That's a perfect example. So when we look at that, that simple example of the number of car accidents and the fact that we don't shut roads, you can take that argument and expand it in a much bigger way around the response being overly restrictive with regards to the way we've handled this virus. There's my 2 minutes.
Okay. So yours, you're talking about, you're against your motion, you're talking about keeping the bars open, restaurants, but closed schools. Well, think about it like this. When you go into bars, especially bars and restaurants that serve alcohol, of course, people, they imbibe and they get a bit more relaxed. This concerned about the distance. They talk louder. They tend to have a bit more, what do they call it, liquid courage, if you would say. And we know that talking to someone or being in front of someone 6 feet apart is good for not transmitting the virus, and you're wearing a mask on top of that. So you're talking about now emboldening someone to even more so, and from my thought process and my experiences, the people who are there imbibing are the ones who are a bit more, and out in the bars are the ones who really don't feel that there is an issue, and that's a big part of the problem. And we've heard even around St. Patrick's Day, even here locally, there are people who end up being what they call the super spreaders because of this reason I just mentioned. They imbibe, they get emboldened, they start talking to people, and not just one person, but many, many people, and infecting many, many people. They're too close. They get a little bit more relaxed and they start getting touchy-feely. My experience has also been people imbibe to get more touchy-feely and huggy and everything else. And so we have to have some sort of controls over that. And that's been true, that alcohol lowers inhibitions and therefore the decision-making factor is not so prevalent there. So opening the bars and restaurants, but closing the schools, again, restaurants as well, if we take out the imbibing factor, people still want to congregate and they sit a little closer. Tables are not typically as big for people to sit 6 feet apart. Okay, so you still have the same issue there. And of course, you can't eat with your mask on. And so you're going to be talking and you're breathing and everything else. And the more to getting on the food of your opponent, the person right across from you, your friend, family member, whatever. And there you go, you start spreading it. But close schools. Well, why close schools? People are talking about closing the school. Well, you can close schools if you need to. But again, it's going to be one of those things where it's all about being cautious where, and kids, of course, we know all the time, they're not as cautious as adults are. And you can see some of the adults are acting like kids in these areas now. But either way, I don't think the schools should be closed. And you're saying keep the bars and restaurants open. I think that's something that should not happen in terms of.
Yeah, well, so that kind of goes back to that other argument, right? So if you're a big city hotel and restaurant with millions of people around, then yeah, I can see where, you know, you got a lot more people, population density, it's going to spread much faster. But if you're out in some small town in Topeka, Kansas, or, you know, the chances of this type of risk being the same is just not, it's just not the same, right? It's just no way it's going to be the same. And we look at, again, the psychological toll that it's already having on these communities. Many of them have already suffered with regards to all the global manufacturing that's kind of left those towns in disarray. And they're just barely getting by as it is. We've got overdoses associated with heroin abuse and substance abuse, and that's taking its psychological toll. And now we're, you know, closing down the school. So even those individuals, maybe even a heroin addict that, you know, maybe he's got a father whose wife at least was taking care of the kids and getting that next generation, you know, up to another level of performance and expectations and opportunity. Now all that's going to disappear, right? Overnight because of the virus, because we're not allowing the kids to go to school. And that makes it impossible for that single mom to take care of her family, right? Because they now can't go out and work because they've got to be home and taking care of the kids. We're seeing the data that shows that the buddy system that they used to at least have in heroin addict communities where, you know, someone would prevent someone else from overdosing. Now, because of social distancing, we're not seeing that type of buddy system carry over during the coronavirus, and now starting to see an increase in deaths and overdoses in a lot of these rural communities, again, killing off a lot of our people. You know, people just have to eat and put a roof over their heads. That's really what they're trying to do. They should have the freedom to survive. They should have the freedom to feed their families. And once again, I think the numbers are gonna just consistently show, you know, history's gonna look back and say that we look at all the things we put in place in terms of restrictions. And, you know, we could have probably gotten away with a little bit of herd immunity, people would have come back stronger, right? That's the American way. And that's the way, you know, most bodies get stronger, right? You build up muscle by getting in the gym. And, you know, some of it is we just gotten, you know, kind of so coddling with Americans and with their children and everything that we just can't seem to, you know, be strong and grow strong. And some of it just part of what the pandemic does is it forces us to grow up as a nation and remember before how we used to be part of that, you know, that frontier spirit. And that's what America was built on.
Okay. All right. I understand that. But when you talk about herd immunity, if you talk about herd immunity versus the deaths of some of the addicts and some of the psychological issues with children, herd immunity is going to be way, way more. So if you look at, so here we have here, CDC's data, herd immunity, 2 million deaths in the United States, up to 10 million deaths. So five times the death rate, if we go to the chart, if we can show you that right quick. When we talk about herd immunity, Sweden had the same notion, herd immunity. They started to have some downward results there. And then next thing you know, it's coming back up again, right, when the winter time comes about. And they found that, hey, you know what, herd immunity, we're going to have to pivot and make do another strategy. We're going to have another strategy rolling out here because it's not working out the way that we wanted it to work out. They anticipated up to 60% of their folks to be immune to this. Okay, also Brazil as well. They got into the opportunity of having four or five times the death rate. And if we're ready, if we're prepared to do that, so instead of 2 million, we're going to have 10 million. We're prepared to do that. And you have to really start talking about the psychological effect then and the financial effect of the economy. The hospitals will be way overrun. People will be way overworked. You're going to have people that are going to start leaving because they're being overworked. There's not enough capacity for hospitals and not enough capacity for clinics. And then we're talking about makeshift clinics. Okay, take this stadium and make it into this. It's going to be out of control, way out of control. Five times the number of deaths that we have right now and or cases or people that are going to be in hospital. We don't even have enough equipment for that. We don't have enough PPE. We don't have enough people. It will spiral out of control. And if America is ready to say, okay, let's just let it happen, then we have all these dead bodies. Okay, then we're going to have to work up with the dead body. I mean, that's all the effect, but we can't really take that. I really feel we cannot take that approach. Flu deaths in the United States, typically 34,000 to 43,000, high of 60,000, okay, versus over 260,000 for COVID-19 deaths so far. Okay, are we ready to continue on with that? Are we ready to continue to say it's just going to go away? Are we ready to say let's just let a pandemic be a pandemic? I don't think that's going to be a valid argument when we get down in the trenches of this and we can't stop the snowball from rolling downhill because we initiated some herd immunity thought process, which is going to really take us into a downward spiral in our economy.
Okay, fair enough. So as we get to the point where we're going to close this down. I hear some of your points and I can hear some points that are valid, right? Around perhaps, you know, I know in certain areas you don't have enough healthcare professionals. I get that. But still, I still don't see there's a reason why we'd have to take, you know, a blanket approach across every single part of America and shut everything down. I think, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that there are a few big areas, big cities and things where these things really break out and we have the greatest risks. In those areas where we don't, I say, you know, we get these people back to work, we open the schools and we let America, you know, get back to doing business, right? With that, we'll get that kind of psychological can-do spirit. We'll get money and funding, that money puts us in a position where, you know, we really can, you know, get to work and make more PPE and take care of ourselves and, you know, unleash those animal spirits. The Americans are very, you know, very ingenious, right? That old American ingenuity will come up with ways if we just let the people in those local communities take the lead. There's no reason why the state shouldn't have and those local communities shouldn't have complete control over their area and be able to decide to open or close without you know, looking at this, what's going to happen with Biden coming in, a lot of people are concerned that he's going to come in and put in place some blanket policy that cuts across every state in the union, and it's going to just really cripple our nation. So those are the real concerns, you know, that I see. And I hear these questions, these points about the leadership of Trump, but by comparison, we look at what's going to happen with the leadership of Biden coming in and what they're going to do. I think it's going to just completely destroy our economy. I think a lot of people, you know, this, you got 70 million people that voted for Trump that believe exactly that way.
Well, I do believe that, and you mentioned the shutdown a few times. I believe that we can prevent a shutdown. I do believe that, meaning that if everyone is on the same page, we've defined the problem, we've measured the problem, everyone's on the same page in terms of thought process, I believe we can shut down. We do not have to shut down the economy. However, we have to have cooperation from the top of the leadership all the way down. We can't have a president saying that, hey, just get some disinfectant, and he's not wearing a mask, he's not being a leader, he's not showing what he should be doing. He caught the virus, which is one of the worst, I feel one of the worst things you could do in terms of leading a country and positioning yourself to get the virus, when you should be helping people have the mindset of not getting the virus. And this is why I'm saying we have to have that leadership, that strong leadership, that if we can get everyone on the same page, if the president can talk to the governors or state governors, get the governors take that message, have them agree, filter that down through the city mayors, filter that down to the city leaders, get some of the celebrities on board, make sure that we continue to get the people who know the knowledge or are specialists in those areas and abide by what they are talking about, the epidemiologists and those folks, right. Then we can prevent a shutdown. It's just that we can't have some people acting like spoiled kids, talking about rights, and then thinking that they can't, just because they don't have any symptoms, that no one else is going to have symptoms. And that's where that mindset has to shift in order to maintain a level of even courtesy for the other people that you're around, and just wear your mask, do the appropriate things that you should do. And I believe we do not have to have a shutdown even amid the pandemic.
Okay, sounds like we've at least achieved some common ground in those areas. So what we're going to do now is we're going to step back and we're going to present what we've talked about in the book and how we came to the conclusion in the book around the belief that we did let in this coronavirus, but we left out more bioscience than was necessary. And at the end of the day, here's the basic argument to defend this point. If we look at the amount of time it typically takes to develop a vaccine, it's usually 4 to 10 years. Most cases, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, right? But yet, we did it in months in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the reason that it was done that way is we applied rigor, discipline, the scientific method. We listened to experts. We collaborated. Not just here in the United States, we collaborated, right? Pfizer collaborated with Germany, with BioNTech. So you got the American ingenuity, but you got the discipline and rigor and science and engineering of the Germans, right? And you see a lot of these things happen with Oxford in the UK and AstraZeneca, right? These types of global partnerships, collaboration, sharing of information with highly respected experts in their field that were allowed to speak with each other openly and honestly in rigorous debate. That's what's got us these 3 to 4 vaccines. That's exactly. What's providing us the genetic engineering opportunity with CRISPR to perhaps combat this virus. Now imagine, had we applied that same approach with respect to the public communication, the leadership, the recognition of the risk around this virus at the very earliest stages, back in late January and February. Imagine where we might be today.
Exactly.
Expect we'd probably be a fraction of the number of cases.
I believe that.
So as we go back and look at some of the points that we made just in summary, right, we talked about, and I think they're valid points, right? The reason why we wanted to do this bait, right? In certain cases, I think we have overreacted. But part of the reason why we overreacted is because we were fighting this virus, right, with a jackhammer instead of a scalpel. In other words, we didn't have the testing. We didn't know where the data was. We didn't know where the outbreaks were, like those kind of those fires that flare up, that you can put water on it very quickly and douse it before it becomes a growing flame. We didn't have the data and information and the speed to do that. And so consequently, we did put ourselves in a position where we did overreact in certain cases out of an abundance of caution. But had we done better testing, we still haven't done the testing and the contact tracing that's necessary. We don't have the PPE and all the other equipment that we didn't mobilize fast enough for to respond. And so that did put us in a position where I agree. There were areas that we locked down stronger probably than were necessary. And we probably psychologically have overcounts, right? But we've also probably have undercounts. So
undercounts as well.
Is the right answer. Any other thoughts, Gravison?
No, I agree with you there. We did put ourselves in a very strong reactionary position where we could be proactive in some degree. And having that position, in order to catch up, you're going to have to overreact and sometimes overthink some things. And just to get back to some sort of balance and normalcy where we failed there, I believe we failed there. I know we did here in Arizona, and all the other information and data now shows that we have failed in that area. And here we are again, now back at the point where we are surging, and that is going to cause even more issues.
Yeah, you're right. And you look at these numbers where, I mean, just look at those deaths, right? That 7-day moving average on the chart here. And just for those of you who are listening via a podcast, we're seeing a blue line versus U.S. versus every other major nation. And we're at the very top, right? We're at the very top.
We're at the very top.
We jumped.
Shame. Embarrassing, honestly.
Immediately, like to 2000. It stayed at 2000, started to drop down. This is 7-day moving average. Started to drop down and finally got down to about 500 at one point. And then it's been climbing back up. It's flattened, but still at a higher rate, closer to 750 or so. And now the most recent data is double that. It's like 1500 per day, 1500 versus 750, just in a matter of a week. And still going. Exactly.
Yeah, and to me, this chart is embarrassing, and it is a representation of the mindset of the people here being very complacent, hard-headed, and uneducated in some degree, and not believing that this is truly the issue that it is until it hits home. And by then, it's too late, from my perspective, right? If you just abide by even half of what's been said out there, I believe you can really come through as a rose. But when we put ourselves in a position to where we're going to have to react once it's at one of our family members are at death's door, then it's really too late then. And it's unfortunate by that point too.
Right, exactly. So in summary, what we've done in the book is we have a whole chapter on this, and we break it down using a scientific approach. And we combine that with the chapter on leadership called Fault Leadership. Mm-hmm. The scientific approach says, first, let's define the problem. Let's get everybody on the same page that we have a problem. And that's where we missed the ball. We did not communicate that. We did not define it. We did not simplify that message for people up front. And so we had people who didn't believe we had a problem right from the get-go. And so that immediately set up these two camps. Once we define the problem, and it's part of kind of an iterative approach to defining the problem, is you look at data, because that data helps you also define. So we measure. That's our next phase. We measure the data and see what's happening. This is where we didn't do enough to have the data on where we're having outbreaks so that we could squash those, you know, douse those fires as quickly as possible in those communities where those breakouts were occurring, which would have given us the opportunity to do this in a much more surgical manner where we would not have had to close down everything. But we didn't do that. And we still have not done that. The next phase is after we measure, we analyze. We analyze to get to the root cause. So the root cause, for example, would be, why aren't people wearing masks? And we would ask that ourselves, why, at least five times. We go through a full root cause analysis. And ultimately, we may find it's because, you know, we're not doing the things that are necessary. You got to give people hope. You've got to give them funding. You've got to give them resources. There's absolutely no reason why we should not have funded everyone, just like they've done in Germany and other places in Europe, mm-hmm. to protect their businesses, to protect their families, and said, listen, we as a government, the only reason we're a government is because the people pay our taxes. It's their money. Well, if it's their money and their lives, give it to them. And for the next year and a half until we get a vaccine, take care of the people. Because without that, you have no economy anyway, right? First principle. First principles, it's like we've forgotten, right? The dog, the tail is wagging the dog. We've forgotten. Why do we even have an economy? Economies and markets and businesses and corporations and Wall Street were set up to provide growth and opportunity and well-being for society. Society, the people come first, not the other way around. Take care of your people, and then they can be in a position to help you take care of the economy. The other is this whole craziness around it's the economy or it's the virus, right, type thing. Listen, if you don't douse the virus, you can't open the economy. Even if you wanted to, people have such psychological fear. No one's going around and telling people not to enter in restaurants, right? There's no vast conspiracy by the left wing or by centrists in government forcing people not to go into restaurants or not to get on airplane flights or to get on ships, right? To cross the oceans, right? And so there's a psychological reason why people aren't doing these things. They have fear. In our business, in our organization, there are a number of people who have simply not come back to business, come back to work, and they don't have the money. They're in a very difficult position. They've got parents who have comorbidities. They've got children with comorbidities. If you just look at the numbers, right, roughly 45% of the American public is overweight, right? That's a risk factor.
That's a high,
Look at those who are over 65, 25%. You look at those with comorbidities, about a third. You add all those numbers up, that's a lot of people, right? So you're just not going to let herd immunity run rampant and kill off all these people. It just doesn't make any kind of sense. So that's why we do the analysis. Let's look at and let's analyze what's really going on. And then based upon the root causes, then let's put in place improvements, countermeasures and things around testing, around restrictions, washing, masking, whatever is necessary to get back on track. And then we put in the controls, the C phase. So define, measure, analyze, improve, control. The controls to keep monitoring so we know where the next outbreak occurs. And in the long term, we're working on the virus and therapeutics, the vaccine and the therapeutics. So that's the approach that we've outlined in the book. I hope you all have an opportunity to also read the book. Before we get ready to close this motion for and against on the coronavirus, any last comments from you, Grandison?
No, I just wanted to vouch for what you said and talk about that a bit more, meaning that in the book, it does outline a methodical approach in both chapters of what should be done. And in addition to what you just spoke about, Frank, the thought leadership, I believe if you work those two in tandem, or any leader in any situation, any crisis, any problem that needs to be solved, whether it's personal and or professional, take the time to do that, then you can definitely have a shorter time and quickly mitigate some of the issues at hand. Definitely want to focus on that.
Well, great, everyone. Listen, thank you for your time today. It's been a joy to share with you kind of the for and against around the coronavirus debates in this country. We look forward to speaking with you all again next week. With that said, until next week, we'll talk to you soon, Grandison.
Okay. All right. Okay, bye-bye.